Blog Talk Radio.
Let's start the show.
I believe in you.
Yeah.
Open the door.
You're tuned in to NSF Radio.
Your
host, Ben Alfred, and Carl Ben Groovy.
When I call and you may not think that I care for you, but you know deep down inside.
You're tuned in to NSF Radio.
Yeah. Once again, we are at it again. Brother Alfred and Brother Koopy is in the house. Brother Koopy is ready to go. We're ready to go. We're definitely going to get into it right now. So listen, we just want to let you know that we have a top subject for you, a hard-hitting subject. We are going to have a special guest come on, and who is a police officer, believe it or not. Been in the Air Force for over 20-something plus years, personal friend of mine, and I wanted to talk to him. I said I brought the subject up about what it means to be a police officer in today's world. We have a couple of special guests going to be coming in as well. So, but first, we always want to give it out to our big brother, my brother Mike T. Brother Koofy, are you in the house?
Yep, I'm here. Glad to be here. What's up?
Nothing, brother. Just trying to get a feel of what's going on. We got a special guest. The chief of police for Sanford, Maine, is going to come on a little later. He's running late into a meeting. He said he's going to try to make it on. We also have a brother, a close brother of mine that, Mr. Jonathan Green, who was an MP in the military. Now, Cooper, didn't you tell me you served in the military as an MP?
Yes, I did do some service as an MP, basically like the last year and a half before I got out. I had switched over.
Oh, okay. So you got that thing going for you. Okay. Well, listen, I'm definitely trying to put everything into place right now, because what we want to do is basically get into the subject. We know what's going on in the world. We know what's been happening. What is with Portland, Oregon, Michigan, New York, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, all this going on. We know on the other side what's going on mentally and the effect it does to a community. But what is going on in the mind of those police officers? How are they able to function and go home and be a father to their families? So let's look at something a little different from a different angle, and we'll get into that. And we'll definitely be able to talk about this in detail. We're going to just try to get our special guest and get him to come online here. Hold on one second. Beyond that, Koofy, so tell me a little bit about what you did as far as the military. What branch were you in?
I was in the Navy, actually.
Oh, you was in the Navy? Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay. So give me a little backstory. What does our MP do?
A military police officer, I actually did a lot of, from where I was, I actually did a lot of security. I also was trained a little bit to be able to go into some situations, dealing with homes and different things like that, because, we had where we were, at least for a little bit, we had to make sure, because of housing and things, that we were able to do things a little differently. So we had jurisdiction that was a little different than some others. And I also was, for part of that, I was also at a, I was also at a company or well, basically that I can't really talk about some of the stuff because of security reasons still to this day, but, I was at, part of NSA doing some stuff for them. So, we had different things. So depending on what you're doing, you know, like if you're doing gate guard security, obviously, you know, people that come in and out of the gate, there are certain things that you have to worry about. You have to look at things as far as who's coming in, if they have the proper ID, if they are invited to an event, are they on a list? You have to do this while showing respect, so you've got to throw up your salutes and things like that. Depends on what you're doing. If you're checking each car individually, you know, you have different levels that you have to be on as far as security levels, as far as even the base itself, you know, if there's a threat to the base or if the military says you're at a different code, then you, you know, sometimes I've done stuff where I was actually checking in the ID myself. I might have been on the side with a shotgun or M16, something like that. Sometimes we even had an M60. There are sometimes at different locations that you had to be able to be secure, you know, secure prisoners that people might try to come for or whatever, or nobody wanted anybody to know where the prisoner was. So you had to even be elevated sometimes up into the air to make sure that you were able to look over vast things. You know, if you're overseas and doing different things in different locations, that can be different things. Now, if you start getting the different rates, which they call MOSs, which are basically just ways to say your job that you have, right, while you're in the military, that can be all types of things as well. So you can be somebody that's helping out, like, you know, if you're a CB, if you're not aware of that, that's a special, you know, part of special forces where they build things up, but they also have to keep things secure. You know, you can have, it really depends on what you're doing. But as an MP, I did a lot of different things in that regard. Like I said, going to homes, you know, being able to be at the gate, being able to make sure that we kept certain things secure and, you know, at all times, making sure, even sometimes even checking vehicles that came in, depending on what was going on. Sometimes you had to check underneath vehicles, the carriages, things like that, to make sure that, you know, people were coming in. And even there were some times that you had located, depending on the security clearance and what you were doing, there were times where you were even put in positions where you were responsible for making sure that whatever came in a building or went out of a building was taken care of. So it's kind of an umbrella type thing, you know, different type of work or different types of situations call for different things.
Okay. Well, our special guest is come on. How you doing, sir? What's going on, my brother? What's going on?
All right now. Everything's doing great. It's good to hear.
All right. Well, just to let the audience know, let them know who you are, your name, rank, and what you do, what you did do. And we can go from there.
Okay. Well, my name is Jonathan Green. I've been with the military and federal government for over 39 years. Now I'm presently retired. I first presently started as an Air Force security policeman and went to many different locations, pretty much overseas. And from there, my last base was actually considered as Clark Air Base or Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. Once I had retired, I had decided to go back to Guam to where I went into civil service as a Department of Defense Naval Police Officer, and I did that for a period of 5 years. And then I continued on with my civil service. I decided to come here to where I'm at here in Los Angeles. I live out here in Lancaster, California, near Edwards Air Force Base. And for another 16 more years, I worked as a Department of Defense, as a federal police officer for the Department of Veterans Affairs, which was very interesting for the 16 years that I was involved. So in all, I have had a plethora of a lot of military experiences, just watching the news and seeing what's going on. I'm just kind of shaking my head like, what's going on here? But, you know, that's life. And so that's pretty much my my background in regards to my law enforcement experience.
All right. Well, all right. You know, tell the audience, you know, we want to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, what's going on worldwide in 2020 is the statistics I read, it was I think it had to do with Veterans Affairs, VA Affairs, that PTSD is on the rise and with military soldiers. I think it has increased over 25% within the last quarter of the year. With those statistics and the studies that's going on, and you know, we must try to figure out a way so that it does not have a domino effect. So today we're talking about being a father and being a police officer. Now, a police officer has many forms of police officer, whether it's federal or state or local, your local police officer, or the local police officer on the corner, or whatever the case may be. You know, we have to look at that, you know, and we must have a solution so other police officers can have resources, whether it is federal, whether it is state, or any branch of the government, so that they can handle the stress the day by day and then not come home. Now, to start off, I'm going to start with the story that I learned. I grew up in Stowe, Massachusetts, and finished being raised in Brockton. And during my time in Brockton, I met a couple officers. They were good people that I knew, and, you know, but then there was been some issues where dealing with the stress of the job. Okay, they will go out and maybe be a detective and become, you know, a full-on sergeant or captain of a certain group or whatever assignment, and the stress of the job, they bring it home, you know. And now there's situations where they're bringing the stress from the job home, and they are taking it out on the significant other and creating an abusive environment. And because there is an abusive environment there, it becomes a toxic situation. And there's been occasions where I've heard police officers come home after the stress, with the stress home, and even gone to a stream of beating their wives even killing their family, the whole family. And it's crazy that these things are going on. And now with 2020, the police officers that are out there on the front lines, you know, giving and getting instructions, sometimes the instructions they do not want to follow. But as a chain of command and as officers or subordinates, it is our duty to follow the instructions from our chain of command. Now, we can refuse it, but in suffer the consequences of that, which can revert back into jail time on our own personal record, or we can follow the instructions blindly almost and do even more harm to our own mental status. So it's like almost like a catch-22. Now, Brother Johnson, I want to ask you, How do you deal with being a father and being a police officer at the same time during your time as on the duty? Brother Green?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes.
So you want to refer that question to me?
Yes. Now, how do you, as a former police officer, how did you deal with the job and then try to balance being a father at home and not let the job affect your home status or the way your mentality work at home?
Okay, well, you know, everybody's an individual and everybody has different ways in terms of how they're going to react to any situation. I can only speak for myself. For me, personally, I did try my best to leave the job where it's at. You cannot live in one situation forever or continuously. You have to separate your life in terms of places that you go. And for me, my ways of releasing whatever I had to go through in regards to the job was through just taking time out for yourself, meaning maybe doing some meditation. Transcendental meditation is a very good form of self-relaxation. I think that's something a lot of people need to look into, in terms of transcendental meditation, and also prayer. Prayer, you know, just because you're in a uniform, that doesn't mean you, in fact, even being in a uniform, you need to pray even more. And I think when you have those factors and you know who you are in terms of your own self-controls, then you can more easily, you know, separate your job when it's stressful at times versus your family life. Because your job is only there to support your family. Okay? It's not, your family's not a part of your job, even though they can support you in regards to your job. So it's primarily up to the individual to, you know, just take that time to step back and say, hey, you know, this is my job, this is my family, and this is how I'm going to control myself in terms of my life. And I think that would be the best way of doing things as a police officer and dealing with your family.
Okay. Now, I understand you saying about, you know, meditation and stuff like that. Can you give any other advice that you know, people that don't see meditation as a solution? Is there any way you can say, okay, fellow officers, like, I know you sometimes you're dealing with, you know, you might be dealing with a 4-star general, and he might be drunk on the base, and you sent out to go ahead and try to do that. Now you like, okay, now this dude's got, he's got all these bars or whatever, and even though I have my authority, there could be some backlash or consequences of dealing with this individual, and you know, and some kind of pressure. So, you know, you're not really thinking about, okay, let me go in the corner, do deep breathing for 10 seconds, and, you know, and go about my day and go home, handle my business. I got to handle with the children and the wife and everything. But is there, you know, and you did mention prayer, but, you know, so with some people that might not be into that, you know, is there any other, I mean, is there any resources that you might have to advise to officers? I mean, like, I know they usually have, like, a resource on bases for the MPs to, you know, to talk to somebody. They have a local base psychiatrist or therapist.
Well, primarily, you know, before you even want to get to that realm of seeing a psychologist or a medical doctor or whatever, you should have your coworkers or your supervisor. A lot of times there's a person called your FTO, your field training officer. You know, you need to, if you feel something from within, then you need to let it go. You need to talk to somebody so you can find out which way that you need to go, i.e. if you need to go to see a chaplain, or if you need to, you know, see a doctor, or you just whomever, your commander, or the chief of police, or what if you're in the civilian sector. Those are the resources that are available. But if you don't reach out to those things, then of course, then you can blame nobody but yourself. So those are the interior. Then, like I said, for the personal ones, those are the ones I spoke of. There's a meditation and prayer. And for those who actually help you revert back to the people who you need to speak to so you can get help. So that would be my best advice.
Okay, okay. Hey, Kubi, do you have anything to add with this? Maybe ask him a question or something like that, which along these lines, what you think?
First of all, nice to talk to you, sir. And as a pastor myself, I actually appreciate you, you know, talking about prayer. Prayer is something that's necessary. But, yeah, we won't even do any buts. Prayer is something that's necessary. And also, I know my brother here is spiritually inclined as well. He's a Muslim as well. So we all three believe in prayer as the saints. And so I'm glad that you would say that. Also, too, though, I would ask you, because and this is something that obviously no, like you said, no two people necessarily live the same life. But you know, I understand also whether it's, you know, being an MP before, you know, being in the military, being a pastor, being somebody who's Black, et cetera. Like, there are times that we must also be able to help others. And also we represent others. You know, if I'm wearing the badge, if I'm wearing the shield, if I'm, you know, living by honor, courage, and commitment, or whatever it is that your branch of service has their core value system, there are certain things that we do together, you know, no man left behind type mentality. And so, you know, with a lot of that stuff that's going on, you know, I know that you would definitely say, hey, every man's journey is his own, which is very much so. Like, I can't deal with what you deal with as far as personally and for everything, and you can't deal with it. But also, too, we take on the burdens of one another, even going by the scripture, Romans 15:1. You know, we take on – it's our duty to take on the infirmities or even the mental health issues sometimes of the brethren, the people who walk with us. So, like, for those who walk with us and those who are going through things, you know, what are some of the things – like, we know you mentioned, you know, your field training officer. However, you know, like – In the Navy, you know, you have a chief, or you have, you know, first class petty officer, somebody who's supposed to make sure that they look over their subordinates, or maybe you have a sergeant, right, or staff sergeant, or whatever, you know, gunnery sergeant, whatever your position is, to do certain things. You know, when in positions like that, if you're talking about being a police officer, you know, and you've got a chief or whatever, or you've got different people who are over and over others in different types of command. What are some of the things that maybe, like you said, you're shaking your head at? What are some of the things that might be lacking? Like, for me, for example, some of the situations where brothers have not had shortness of breath, not even just talking about something extreme with, George, you know, George Floyd, but even something like, hey, something as simple in training as if I'm going to put you on the ground and I'm putting you on your chest and I have your hands behind your back, I know that if I'm not careful, you'll die from asphyxiation just from that, without even having any pressure, if we make sure you're not there, or if somebody is mentally unstable. Simple training as far as, hey, we should, you know, if I'm called out and somebody has a mental health issue, there's certain things we should do, or certain people we can even lean on that could come with. There's other organizations that can be involved in arrest. What are some of the things that you're seeing that maybe we're not, you know, fellow officers, or, well, you're not an officer. Well, you are once an officer, always an officer, right? But, you know, or some, you know, once in something, always something. You don't stop being it just because you're retired. But what are some of the things that people in positions like that, maybe you have seen, that are kind of disappointing, and maybe some things you wish could be done, maybe even through training, or maybe even through some type of reconstruction to the system?
Alfred?
Yeah, go ahead. I feel that I like to hear the answer for that one. That would be. That's a good one there. So what is your view on that?
Well, the gentleman speaks correctly. Unfortunately, sometimes for officers, when they're involved in a traumatic situation, and it's life-threatening, because there's a word called fatal funnel, where you get focus into one thing, and then when you're focusing on one thing, you're not really thinking in a broad manner. So therefore, I don't condone what happened with George Floyd or anybody that's subjected to extreme violence. But those officers, unfortunately, got into a fatal funnel situation to where they were not thinking of anything else. They were just thinking about what they were doing. And unfortunately, you know, the person, the victim, you know, George Floyd and many others suffered from their fatal funnel conflict. And what I mean is their mental mindset. So I think a lot now what needs to be done out here in California, we have a system, it's called a PET team, which is a psychological evaluation team. I think there needs to be people that there needs to be teams with the officers when they're dealing with people that do have psychological issues with them, okay? Because not all officers, like I said, are trained to handle psychological issues. And sometimes they'll take that psychological and and look at it as a violent, only a violent situation, which it is. It can be very violent, because I've dealt with many veterans that, that went sideways. But we had to have, instead of the officers taking on that person who's having that psychological issue, there's a reason why that person's having a psychological issue, because of whatever happened to them in the past. So therefore, by having psychological teams with the officers, working with the officers, you know, you can probably de-escalate the officer's mindset and de-escalate the situation, and therefore the PET team can take over and can probably subdue or whatever they need to do to get that person for medical treatment. Unfortunately, when now what's happening with all this incidents, think about how many PET teams, psychological teams, have been with officers where the victims have now are dead. There has not been it. Okay, so I think let me just go into another thing about defunding the police. I know I'm just totally going way off, but I'm not. What I mean is, I don't believe that in terms of defunding the police is an important factor. I think redirecting the funds that the police have may support a PET team or a psychological or somebody, a doctor with them, to assist them would be the best way in terms of hopefully de-escalating these unfortunate situations where people are physically hurt or killed based upon, like I say again, the officer initially getting into a volatile situation and into a fatal funnel themselves. They're also actually psychologically, they're psychologically affected at the same time. So, again, I'm not going to stretch this out. I think the psychological evaluation team would be the best way in terms of de-escalating the situation and getting the person that's having the problem some help instead of being hurt.
Okay. So it's basically, I think what it is, getting it's sort of like what they say, a five-man squad. So some people used to use the term a five-man squad. There's a medical person always on personnel, part of the squad. So when they handle a stressful situation, they should have a five-man squad. And they should have a medical that deals with the physical and as well as the mental on hand when they're dealing with a de-escalating situation. And if I'm understanding that correctly. So, you know, I feel that too because there's a lot of things that – because you only have – less than a second to react to an escalated situation, to de-escalate it, and try to put it in a proper perspective so that the situation does not get out of hand. And I see that all the time. But the thing is, I'm looking at is even though you de-escalate that situation, if that person or that officer is a father or a husband, you know, that pressure, that way of thinking is like you said, it's like a funnel. You're straight down the line. So you're trying to deal with these issues, and then you got to come home, and suddenly the wife just starts screaming at you. The children are misbehaving, and you're trying to balance it up. Yes, separate it, but sometimes that gray line gets blurry. That line between office and personal gets blurry. So, you know, now, you know, being a student of psychiatry and theology, I have come upon that if you look at yourself before you approach the next situation and you analyze it and you say, okay, these are the tools that I can apply so when I leave this job, you know, because, you know, I'm just going to put it like I'm not going to say reality, but I'm going to say from TV point of view, most of the time you see the officers after they did this shift, they come home, they go to their locker, take the uniform off, take the belt off. Well, if that is the real, if that's the reality of it, if that's real what goes on, then, you know, when you're taking that belt off and you put your gun in your safety box, all right, and make sure you secure everything safety, during that process, you're not just taking the belt off, you should be taking the mindset of what has occurred during that shift as well. So you should do like a checklist and process the information. And yes, it might be a case that you're working on for a year or 2 years, or you're trying to break this case and it bothers you that you can't break this case. But you got to learn how to separate that completely, and where you do not be affecting your personal issues. And when we deal with it, officers, whether it's in Portland, Oregon, or New York, or Georgia, Florida, California, because, you know, we deal with a bunch of it, or you deal with the reality that, you know, people are being harmed by other officers, but you can't blame all the officers for that. You can blame there's a bad officer on the bunch. I am not saying that, you know, I'm not even saying the police are bad. No, I say those who are bad in that bunch. Go ahead.
And we've got somebody on here too as well. And like I said, you know, we all come from different places and different cloths and stuff and have different experiences. One of the things that I also find though too is that no matter what, you know, especially because we're talking about escalating the police and going into some other things that I know we're trying to focus on being a father at home as well. But one of the things, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, you know, I was talking about this. I teach classes as well, and so we were talking about this in class last night with our last night we talked about solutions from the Black perspective. It's one of the classes we were teaching Black history earlier that day, and in both the classes we kind of brought up the fact that no matter what you want to talk about, we have to actually start looking at the fact that unfortunately we live in a system, whether we like it or not. Even when we talk about living, being in the world but not of the world, that word world in Greek is talking about cosmos. It means system. So we're in a system, but we're trying not to be of it. And that's the path. Like, we don't really want to talk about that, but systemically we have people that are being asked to defend a system that maybe is not the greatest for everyone. And at the same time, they're trying to make it great for everyone. So that in and of itself, I think, is one of the things we don't talk about enough. So when you talk about defunding the police, like, I could care less, honestly, like the brother said, I could care less about really defunding the police, because at the end of the day, really the police are the reason why the police are kind of going off the rails at times, not every single one, but also too, it's not like when stuff happens, we're seeing a lot of results as far as even discipline. So the reason is you have a system that's in place. Now, I'm not here to say that every police officer that goes in has bad intentions, that has malice in their heart, has hatred and wants every Black person to die, but we're in a system that has been designed in which that happens. And if we want to say that that's not so, if you look at the Constitution, when you read "We the People" at that time, you would have been 3/5 of a human being. So we're not in a normal system. We kind of try to treat it as if the police are policing things as if everything is straight, and they're not. And so they already are up against the wall, if we're going to be honest. Like, you were already cornered, in a sense, you know, because here I am, I'm trying to police. And I'm trying to police it. And by the way, like, when I joined the military originally, you know, I was doing this stuff, I was 17 years old. So I was not my 17-year-old, my baby, you know, really being a baby mentally, my mindset was, okay, I'm coming out here. I'm going to defend everybody. Whatever the president says is right. Everything about America is gung-ho, whatever. And that didn't necessarily work out for the best benefit for myself and sometimes others as well. So, like, I understand. I get it, you know, from a mindset of, it's not as simple as even what we make it to be. And I think that's something that we should, you know, even with the brother being on, maybe have him talk about some, because we have this weird perception on different, no matter what your viewpoint, we have this weird perception that we don't deal with this elephant in the room that says, oh, wait a minute, you know, everything is evil, or we have a perception everything is the ultimate good and get off our backs. The reality is that you've got a lot going on already. You've got some people looking at people as different already. Like, you know, some people look at people bad because they're homeless. Some people look at people bad because they're Black. Some people look at people bad because they're white. Some people look at people as not being worth anything because they're a woman, et cetera, et cetera. So now you've got people who have that in their mindset they're joining the police force, trying to aspire to be something that's supposed to be a higher level. And at the same time, they're trying to do a job in dealing with people of different cultures, different backgrounds, different beliefs. Some of them don't trust them because they're police. Some of them, are on drugs, whatever. And so you've got all that going in. And I think we have to start acknowledging that part of it as well, that the system that the police are being asked to even be involved in, whether you want to say defending it, reacting to it, whatever, the system is messed up. And so, how when we talk about that, how do we have a police officer deal with being in a system that's messed up and then coming home trying to have his system within a system that's completely on its own? This is my house. This is my home. I think we have to start asking questions more like that. How do we get these systems in order that allow us to be in the world but not of it, so to speak?
Right. Mm. So, brother Green, what you think about what you just stated?
He hammered right on the nail. Many times when you're, how can I say, personally for myself and other officers rolling around and you'll see somebody, and automatically sometimes you already will stereotype them to be in a certain way. And sometimes the system that you're in wants you to react in that way. And it's hard. You've got to find some ways to separate. Some officers can separate themselves and treat certain situations differently based upon what is happening. Some officers are just straightforward. They don't think, unfortunately, and they treat everybody as what they think they need to be treated as. And so, and that's where the problem comes from, where, there's that PTSD moment where, you might come from a bad situation, and then you come upon somebody else, and they might not fit your mold in terms of how you think they should look, but you'll treat them just the same as the person before. But come to find out that they're there just for help, but you end up treating them bad. And then that's the problem, unfortunately, when it gets into the racial matter of officers treating young men of color in a negative way, where maybe that officer might have came from maybe county, locked up somebody who was of color, who did something bad, and then rolling down the street and didn't come in contact with another gentleman of color, and unfortunately treating him bad in that, and it's hard. And actually, it's a mental, psychological situation that the officer is suffering. And this is where the ongoing mistrust and all this that's going on today, officers having a hard time coming out of that psychological bad situation, which is actually a PTSD situation. You said, Alfred, bringing it home. So we're in a system where it's not easy to be a police officer. I mean, if you can retire and walk away, and you're without any illnesses, you've done pretty well. But most officers that do retire do have not maybe some have some psychological issues, but a lot do have physical issues, in terms of high blood pressure, diabetes, you name it, and a lot of them retire early. And because of the stress of the system that they have to continue to have to deal with. So, it's kind of like, I really don't know how this is going to change, but I hope they will some way find a way that it will evolve for the better. So that's
right.
That's my best advice.
Yeah, and I want to say that was great points there. Because, we need to look at these things on a constant basis and definitely need to try to analyze ways, try to give resources. So one of the things we do here at NSF, on NSF radio show on Thursdays, is we try to give answers to the hard questions. The hard questions is, how do we how do we divide it? Yes, there's multiple ways of dividing, you know, dividing the home, but there's many ways that you can use techniques, tricks, whatever you want to call it, to try to separate it. Because, like, everybody's different. And some things click with some people faster than the other way that might work for somebody else. So what we want to do is try to give you some pointers and tips, but we're going to get into that a little bit later. Right now, we're going to head into a commercial real quick and let you know what's going on out here.
What's going on?
All right, so just stay.
To Midnight Oil with King Cam on NSF Radio, where you get music, motivation, and more.
All right. Also want to let everybody know, tune in today. We're on energy. You can on listen to us streaming live on KBU Germany, Australia, or good in the Haven, you know. It's been 9:30, you know. Ching all right. You know, everybody, if you on there, just, you know, want to tune in, you can call in to us at 516-418-5805. That's 516-418-5805. Just call right in, and if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer for you. All right, we have Officer Jonathan Green online, who is a personally one of my best people to know, and I'm proud to have him. And we got your brother Koopy on the line, ready for you to answer the question. So if you have a question, let's say you are a police officer and you are hearing this message, call in, tune in. And we don't forget, every Thursday, Eastern Standard Time, from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m., all right, Eastern Standard Time. Tune in, log in, download, come on in. And if you'd like to donate to the show, just go to nsfatherhood.org. /NSF radio station, and go right down there, fill out the form, or just click on and donate. And if you just want to do anonymous, and just donate to the cause, help a father out there. We help our everybody. We got to support. We have to make a great nation. See, the scriptures also talk about, you know, I'm not trying to be biblical with it, but I'm going to say it like this. Even the scriptures would say that the family starts with the head. And we have to, if the head is not working, then the body will fall. So we have to keep that mentality going. And to be a proper father and to be a person of great substance, guess what? We have to make sure that father's maintaining his job. They know their job, and they're doing it the proper way so they can keep their children in their life. They can keep their life going smoothly and productively. So with that being said, we're going to get right back into the second part of it all. You know, just let you know, because we are here, and we're going like that. All right. Now, we're going to the next part. Now, we talked a little bit about PTSD. For those that don't know, PTSD means post-traumatic syndrome. And to have it's a mental imbalancing of a reaction to a traumatic situation. And it occurs within soldiers more than other people, but also with other officers, those who are in authority or dealing with drastic situations, EMT workers, not just police officers on the street, federal officers, any person that might be in a position to deal with traumatic situations, and it can occur in those people. What we want to do is we want to get into what it means. So I want each of y'all to give me your most traumatic situation that you've seen on the job that you can speak, okay? Let me know from y'all's perspective. So we're going to start with Brother Koopy, and then you, Brother Jay, you will go into that next part.
Okay, so you want what, just to talk about?
Yeah, Brother Koopy, give me your what you have seen as far as PTSD related situation, if you have seen anything like that.
I mean, I can just run some off real quick. I mean, I know that I personally have been on the fourth floor at a VA, if you know what that means. Basically, that usually the fourth floor is where they put people who have traumatic experiences, and I actually went into a clinical depression dealing with the loss of some people, and was there for about a week and maybe a couple of days past that. I only had to do it once, but I personally went through that in dealing with some shock and some things. I have seen many of our fellow veterans who have served who I see from time to time on the street still in certain cities, sometimes Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Georgia, Denver, Colorado, different places that I frequent or whatever. I have, you know, doing different things for the community. I've seen a lot of people that I know to be veterans. I know that basically they are dealing with things. I deal with them when I'm in town and stuff and try to make sure we get their, you know, family in touch with them. But a lot of times what happens with these people is they're kind of on the street. They'll be scooped up off the street. They find out they're veterans. Maybe they put them in the same place I was talking about for about 2 weeks. And after that, they kind of get delivered right back to the same place. I've definitely seen, I know of some people who, you know, wake up or even were raised with people who wake up and still believe that they're, you know, fighting in the middle of Vietnam. And, you know, you kind of have to find ways to make sure that you don't come at them in their sleep because they might consider you to be the enemy. However, you know, try to find ways to help them to break out of it. So there's, you know, there's a few examples of it.
All right. Brother Green, give me your best example of dealing with either an officer that was dealing with the PTSD or sent in to deal with it. Or give me something along those lines that you can speak of.
Well, gentlemen, I can relate exactly what he's experienced actually being a former Veterans Affairs police officer. For myself, the biggest problem in the veteran community is suicide. And I have unfortunately responded to a couple of those instances where unfortunately, one situation was where a gentleman was in the bathroom. We went in, we had popped the lock, went in, and he already had did what is called an 8-ball. An 8-ball is a concoction of heroin, crack, and anything else that they could put in there, and he shot it up. So he was a dead man at the tail. I said, the only dead man standing that I ever witnessed. And unfortunately, there's a lot of suicide situations happening within the veteran community. So it affects the veteran, and also it can affect the officer too. You know, so that's why I say for all veterans, if they are feeling in any way of wanting to harm themselves or anything like that, that the VA does have resources that you can call or reach out or speak to somebody, speak to a pastor, don't let your inner feelings or that inner thought, which is probably not holy, telling you to do something to yourself in an evil manner, for you to speak to somebody so that you can get the help and assistance. Don't be ashamed if you're in a psychiatric situation. I'd rather be in a psychiatric situation and getting help than being, you know, dead on my back. And, you know, and that's not where God wants us to go. So therefore, like I say again, the VA does have resources. And so that's like one of the most traumatic situations. Like I said, the constant homelessness that's out there in terms of the veteran community. And then also, and let me say this, you know, veterans are there for help, but then there are some veterans that don't want help. They don't want that regimented lifestyle that the VA has to offer. They'll come in and get what they want, but then thereafter, they'll go right back out onto the street. And you know, so sometimes you just have to, you know, wipe your hands and just let that person do what they have to do in regards to that. And I've been told that, Green, I don't want to go into, you know, whatever programs that are available because I don't want to be told what to do. Because they've already done that throughout the years when they were active duty. So, you know, they prefer to be out on the street. They'll get what they need. So, you know, it's one of those tight ropes. Like I said, being a police officer, especially in a federal position, we work with Department of Veterans, it's a tight rope. You have to juggle in terms of whom you're dealing with. And, yeah, so that's my one of the most traumatic experiences is having to see somebody unfortunately take their life. So that's my experience.
And if I can just
see that,
speak on that too,
go
real
ahead.
Quick, because that's very traumatic, but also too, you know, sometimes that's why I think we also, you know, we had a little bit of a situation recently where we know that the VA kind of had to go through a huge overhaul because of some things that were going on in different places. But I do know that also too, as somebody who was a veteran, somebody who was homeless, when I was in the Chicago area, I didn't really get much in the way of help other than every once in a while we might have the bottom of a church or something that might give you the opportunity to sleep in there. And, you know, like Chicago weather when it gets cold, and that's a monster right there. And it wasn't because of drugs. It wasn't because of bad choice. Well, I guess everybody has choices that they can live with, but the reality was that basically I couldn't there a job that I had. They let me go. And so because of it, I couldn't get stuff in time. And, you know, I was doing the single father thing and even came over to Illinois, from Illinois rather than the Washington, D.C. area, and was able to get a little better care because somebody finally was willing to actually hear out too. And I know sometimes that can be part of it too, where, yeah, there is some stuff where we definitely don't listen. I know I can be stubborn at times myself. I don't know who has never been stubborn at all. Maybe that person exists who's never not listened to somebody. But there also are times where I was just trying to say, hey, look, you know, some of these situations don't work. Like I know for myself, I finally found a place that's actually called Adams Place, but it's not part of the government at all. It was Catholic Charities, and I went somewhere different that someone suggested rather than go through because the places that they had for us, not all places are like this, obviously, but the places they had for us were places where literally if I wanted to use the bathroom, which was a common area, I might be, you know, stepping through other people's, you know, urine and fecal matter on the floor. Or, you know, if I'm sleeping next to people, you might be sleeping in the room with people and it's tons of people in the same room and people are coughing on one another too. So, you know, like things like that made it to where even if it was cold at night, I'd rather find a place to sleep outside. Even if I didn't have a tent or whatever, at least make sure that I was covered up, you know, bring all my belongings with me or whatever, because it was easier for me mentally to deal with that than it was to deal with being in a place to where it seemed like there was some chaos and disorder. Now, that's not every single place. I would say that's definitely not the majority of places, you know, but there are certain things even with that that we have to be aware of as well that do go on. And if I had never been through it, if I can be honest, I was one of these people growing up and thinking, you know, how can somebody be homeless? They've got to be a terrible person, be homeless, this, that, whatever. Then you end up there yourself, especially trying to do things with your children. And a lot of times my children would have to go other places because I couldn't get, because as a single father, they don't treat it the way as you are as a single mother to help you to be able to make sure you all can stay together. So until I was able to get some things together financially and I was blessed to be in a position where I could get some pay through some of the spiritual organizations I was doing stuff with before we finally were able to get our, you know, Kofi of 40 stuff and Servants of Christ stuff going, up until then, you know, I basically had to either depend on the government fully and do everything they said, which was great to a certain extent, but also some things I needed that I need to be able to get. I couldn't get those things because, oh, we don't give those things to you or whatever. So I think those are things we have to also remember as well.
Yeah. I see that because, I've seen some traumatic stuff on my level, even as a personal community service worker, I would say, when I was part of the Dope Busters team in Boston with the Nation, and I would literally be out trying to do my thing, and I would see parents and families, you know, giving cocaine to babies, and, you know, and it's just something that, you know, it stuck with you to the point that your mind just like, I can't believe this is real. And, you know, you might have just seen it on TV and said, oh, that's just TV. But when you see something like that for real, it does affect you. And it sticks with you through a lifespan. And when you're trying to deal with situations, like, they can affect you. In fact, I remember there was a broadcast that came out. It got so bad for one brother, he killed himself. And in our faith, that's bad. That's not allowed. You don't do that. You know, and it's something that really messes with your head. And then it really does that. So it's on the lines of the PTSD. It's traumatic. It's harmful, and I would just say the one word to describe it: toxic. And and just allowing yourself to be in a normal situation, occurrences, it can be hard for you to transfer that mental state. And now you're looking at a lot of people, almost everyone, a little bit differently. You know what I'm saying? And your views, trying to deal with these situations, and then trying to be an officer, and then turn around, and once you're supposed to be done with the day, but we all know that the badge never goes away. You can take the physical uniform off, but your instincts is always on as an officer. You can sit there and try to do work on that and everything. So, like I said, you know, it's not easy. So, you know, as a person dealing with these issues, you know, it's not really easy. We just got a question from the audience out here. It's stating, let me read it real quick. It says, okay, all right. Well, here's what they're saying. They said, child support originally drafted under the Title 6 to obligate black men, a white woman in Texas has to sue to get enforcement against her ex-husband for that very reason. So that person is saying that because of the mental stress between the father and as an officer, they had to go to extremes to keep the father away because he could not leave the job and separate the job emotions from his personal emotions. And it had to go to an extreme where the courts had to get involved, you know, and plus he was also evading the child support situation. Okay, now, I don't know who wants to handle this. I'm going to leave that to you all. So who wants to try to talk about certain situations like this, how to deal with this? What would you say to that person?
Well, in regards to the officer not paying his child support?
They had a child support issue.
Right.
That was drafted, but it blew to out of hand, and he's using his authority as an officer in, this is in Texas now, that they had to put the courts involved because of the child support not being there, and for the reason that he was an officer because of threat. There was a threat there.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then he shouldn't even be wearing his badge. He should He should be behind a desk or suspended. I don't think he would even, if his department knows about that, and then he shouldn't even be working in the capacity. He shouldn't have any police authority whatsoever in regards to, you know, neglecting child support or if there's any type of threatening situation regarding his spouse or child. So, if the court's involved with that, they'll handle it. And, in regards to him, he's not above the law. He's got to do his part in terms of being a father first and a police officer second. And now with his situation, sounds like he's not going to even be a police officer based upon what I'm hearing. So,
you
got to deal with it.
Yeah. Cooper, what you think?
I mean, I agree. I agree with, pretty much everything that was said. I wouldn't really add much to it. The only thing I would say once again is, and this to me, like you know me, brother, and with the people I've been reaching, we've been blessed where we're reaching a lot of people around the world and stuff and doing a lot of things. And one thing that's been my focus is just, systemic changes. So, at the end of the day, if we want to go into that, you're dealing with psychological stuff. You're dealing with things, you're dealing with stresses. You might be dealing with things that the person is not equipped to handle, or you might be dealing with things that the person is equipped to handle, but nobody really seems to be equipped to help them with as well. To me, it's never really as simple as just up, this happened, and that's it. There are certain laws that are in place and things that should be able to protect the family. I don't know the full situation, so I can't go into everything, but I would say that definitely some of that has to do with the person, that has to do with some things that have to happen on the inside, and even some of the training that you try to do as far as helping fathers out, with the classes that you do on every 25th of the month, which I would suggest that some people partake in. There's a lot of stuff that we're not trained to do. So all the stuff that the gentleman, that our brother is saying is correct. But I would also say that there's a lot of things that we don't really comprehend and understand as far as even just being a father. What is being a father? What is being a man? What is being a strong man? What is being a black man, if we even want to go there? Some people would say that's not necessary, but if it's not necessary, maybe it shouldn't be, but it's something that we actually live through. So there's a lot of things that when I hear something like that, it's real to me. The first thing, if I were to try to help this individual, which is one of the first things I start thinking about, if I were to help this individual, I would start looking at doing something as far as trying to figure out, what is it that you were even taught? What is your motivation? The word motivation even meaning, we think motivation means to motivate. To motivate is different than motivation. Motivation means the place that I've arrived at due to what has motivated me. So what I've arrived in this place, I've arrived with this mental health issue. I've arrived in a place where people are kind of just like, well, you did bad, courts will take care of it, and you deal with it, whatever. If I'm going to rehabilitate this person, and if I'm going to prevent others from becoming this person, because this is something also we don't think about. A lot of our law is reactionary rather than being proactive. We're usually reactive, right? So the law is usually designed, if somebody does something wrong, then we will go ahead and make sure we punish this person, and that's how we think that we're going to train people to be better, rather than being proactive. What are some things we can start putting in place already to help people to not get to this situation? Or if somebody's here, how can we prevent it from happening again? And let's be honest, the prison system is not designed to do that. The prison system is designed to be a revolving door. If you go into the shelters that I was talking about earlier, you go there, you ask certain people for help. A lot of them aren't going to help you, but so much. And they're going to help you up to what their paycheck says they have to help you with, right? And then they basically leave you alone. So we have a situation where there's somebody here who is going through a lot. I'm not saying that that absolves the person. I'm not saying we should shorten their sentence. That's not what I'm on. However, what are the things that we're going to do to begin to say, all right, what are the things that get people to this position? What are the things that are stressful? To each their own, which is great. But guess what? Not every police officer handles stress the way that our brother seems to be able to handle it, which is, it sounds like he's got a hold on things. He's got very good tie on things as far as spirituality, as far as separation of church and state, if you will, kind of sort of, right? I go outside, but when I come home, this is what I do. However, everybody is not equipped using those tools And we're not always teaching these people while they are on the force. We're not always giving these tools there as well. You know, sometimes the tool is for us is like, well, you know, get yourself together, or, you know, if you can't do it, you know, and I'm not saying that's what he's saying. I'm saying in general, it's what I've seen, it's what I've experienced, it's what I've lived through. A lot of times when I'm saying I've got an issue with this, it's kind of like, well, we can give you this much, but after that, you know, to each their own. And look, there's personal responsibility too. So, this, you know, this conversation is not as simple as what, you know, maybe we would want it to be. You know, it's not as easy, as quick as maybe we want it to be, because there's no quick fixes. But a lot of times we're very reactive.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I think we have to get some proactive things in mind as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I got another question from the audience right here, and either one of y'all can answer, whoever wants to answer, just jump right on in. They're saying, well, being a police officer, if you're not able to handle the mental state of being a police officer, before you lay down and be intimate with your partner, is the most effective way of birth control for you as an officer, if you're not able to handle the stress, is to keep your legs closed. Agree or disagree?
Okay, so there's a lot in that. Hold on. So the question was,
yes.
I'm sorry, brother. So the question was like, wait a minute. So it doesn't seem like a question. It seems like more of a statement. I guess the person is, it sounds like the person is saying, before, so if you're going to be a police officer and you can't handle the stress and basically don't have a child, is that what the person is saying?
Yes. Yeah, that's what they're saying. Agree or disagree? And they use the term, keep your legs closed.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know if it's a good, no offense to the person, but I don't know how, well, first of all, it doesn't sound like a question. I guess they're saying agree or disagree. They want a one-word answer, but you can't do that. Like, let me say it to the person like this. I don't know if they've ever had any military experience, but let me say it to the person like this. Go over, let's say you go over to Afghanistan or you go over to Iraq. You see a bunch of people around you being shot in the head. You've already had a child. You've already had a couple children. You've been great, but you see these people shot in the head. You make sure that you drag them to safety. Maybe one person lives, but it's no longer the same, kind of almost like a vegetable. The other person dies. These are people that you have experienced things with. You went to training with. You did physical training with. You did all these things, and now you see something that is incredibly difficult to deal with happen in front of you. Or let's say you're a police officer who you have children, everything's fine, you've had a partner, and you see your partner get, you know, basically like lit up right in front of you. You stay there with your partner. Your partner survives for, you know, a little while. Maybe it takes too long for the ambulance to get towards you. You know, maybe it takes 15, 20 minutes too long for the ambulance to get to you. Your partner dies in your arms. You watch them go in the back of an ambulance knowing that they're probably not going to come back again. Things start to happen to you that build up. Now you're dealing with the same stress. Excuse me. Maybe you have another partner that you're dealing with. Maybe you're trying to learn this partner, but at the same time, like, you know, that partner, you start thinking about your other partner. You start thinking about how bad things are. Maybe you're somebody that's being messed over by your department, and so you're trying to do the nice thing, but you also feel kind of frustrated. Maybe you should have got a promotion, but for whatever reason, politics, you can't. You're still on the same level. You're still a corporal or whatever. You can't make it. There's tons of things that happen, and so I get what the person is saying. Once again, I think that goes to home training, that goes to some of the basics, that goes to what is a father, what is a man, what is required as a man, what is required as a man to take care of the family, before we even get to what is required to make sure that you take care of home and job simultaneously. However, mm-hmm. to say that everybody who is being, everybody that's going through anything, once again, I got to be careful because we're in this weird thing of cancel culture, people misrepresenting what you say, right? So let me be careful to say I'm not down for any husband, any man putting his hand on any woman for any circumstance unless literally like their life is on the line, like you're about to be stabbed and you need to protect your life or protect the life of a loved one, right? Outside of that, you as a man don't have the right to come home and just smack your wife or something because you're frustrated. What I'm saying, though, also, too, is to say that to demean his manhood, in a sense, I don't know if that was what was meant, but that's really what's happening is you don't deserve to have children. because you went through mental stress, you know, mental stress or whatever, I think we got to be careful about that too. You can already have a family, or you can think that you're doing okay and still be unraveling mentally and not even know. And going back to what the brother was saying earlier, that's why you have, you know, FTO. That's why you have people. That's why you have chiefs. That's why you have sergeants, people that should be paying attention to you every day. You know, I, as a pastor, for example, we do it differently. So we're out in the streets. We're out in places where people don't have food. We go to other countries. Sometimes we have to go places where we're defended by people. We have to literally have people walk with us into certain territories. Even in the States, I've got to go to some places to where it's hood. And so I got to call up certain people to be like, yo, I'm showing up at this time. Since you guys have our back or whatever, because we take care of the hood, we need you to make sure that we can walk through, like take care of us and let people know that we're coming through. Like, so all those things I have to maintain. I have to look at all those things. And with a bunch of moving parts, it's on me as leadership to look around and be like, hey, you are kind of unraveling. You are not doing things you're supposed to do. Hey, what's going on at home? It seems like you're not focused the same way. And we teach other people to do the same thing. And even within our organization, we have people specifically trained to deal with people with mental health issues, because you've got to have all that stuff covered. So I don't think it's as simple as just being like, hey, you know, you're not a man. You can't take care of your children. You don't deserve to be on the police force. There are always different circumstances, and that's why I think we have to, you know, once again, go back to the basics, and we also must have empathy and the passion and the compassion in our hearts to be loving towards people, even if we don't like what they've done or what they might have to even the intention or the ability to do. We still need to make sure that we're putting them in better situations rather than just having a mindset that goes, oh, well, you know, they're a bad person. They don't deserve whatever, whatever. I think we got to be careful about that.
Right. If I can say the biggest word I can say is just being open-minded. Being open-minded can make you see a lot of things versus you trying to just look at that individual and then stereotyping everybody as one. And, you said it in a nutshell. It's open-mindedness. And that's how police officers have to be. They have to be open-minded on a job, and they have to find a way to be open-minded when they go home. And if they can do that, then it just makes the life that they're – because as we all know, being a police officer, especially now, it's not probably one of the best jobs you want to be in, you know, right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we can find that way to be open-minded and just try to, you know, love God, love yourself, and anything after that underneath you, you can possibly handle. And you can help other people if you have that type of mindset. And that's loving of yourself. And that's, you know, unfortunately, people, I don't care if you're in a uniform or out, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, don't have that. You know, they don't have that loving of themselves. And when they can find that in any profession, I don't care. And if you love yourself, then you can share your love with other people. And it will make your job much better, and you can help other people even more. But if you come in a frustrated state, then, of course, you're going to frustrate the people that are around, because people can feel your vibe. People can feel you and how you are. So I, for myself, as I speak of just trying to be open-minded, trying to, but, you know, of course, you, and when you're out there, you have to protect yourself. You're not just going to walk into something, but you're trying to think about, what am I going to do to try to help this person, or what am I going to do to keep myself steady so I can help this person? And if you put all those factors together, then, of course, you know, I believe that it would just make your life just a little bit more easier in terms of the things that you involve yourself in and other people that are around you. So that's my thought.
All right. We got one last question. It's a little bit offbeat because time's about to roll down, but we can get into it right now. But we're going to take a little break for 3 seconds right now and just go into it. Brother Koobie, what you got going on Koobie Speaks this week?
Well, first of all, thanks for, you know, thank you to everybody for being on. And I'm on the same platform through the same streaming, you know, on Saturday at 1 o'clock p.m. You can join us for Koobie Speaks. I'm not 100% sure what we're going to talk about. There's been so many different things that have been coming up. We've actually had some interesting discussions online about vaccines and people all over the world chiming in with that. So we might kind of sit on that a little bit. But, you know, as always, just wait and see. We hope that you tune in. We'll be on 1 o'clock p.m. New York time, Eastern time, or Standard Eastern time, depending on how you look at time. And looking forward to it. And hopefully the week after we'll actually have a guest. We'll have more information on that as soon as I have some more details.
Okay. Also, everybody, if you are a fan of the show, we do have NSF Radio, fan gear, Kofi Speaks sneakers are now released out here. We have the Midnight Oil with King Cam. Sneakers are right in clothing, blankets, towels, shower curtain. NSF Radio, shower curtains, sneakers, latest women wear, tights, you name it. Just go to NSF Radio on nsfatherhood.org/NS Radio Stations, and just go right on in and click on in the link and start buying away. And remember, every time you buy a product from NSF Radio and NFL radio stations, or you support or you send a donation, you help on a father that is in need, that is desperately going through some hard times but needs a little help, we supply that help for them. It's, and like I said, you can do the $5 donation, you can do a $20, you can do a $1,000 donation, but we, you know, we need your donation, your time you're giving out here. Remember, NSF is a 501c3 filed with the federal government as well, and that we are nonprofit status. All funding goes towards to pay for any funding or any programs that need to be paid for, and to subsidiaries that is connected to said program. So with that being said, we want to say senior users on support with that. We appreciate you all coming on today, but we're going to get into one last question. It's time might be busting out soon, and I'm going with it. All right. One at a time, I'm going to shoot at you, say your name, and you go at it, and this is a fun fact we do. All right, if you are a single police officer and you have a female partner, should you get involved with that female partner? Mr. Green, what you think?
While on duty, you keep your hands on the steering wheel, okay? You keep it professional.
Yeah.
Right, because you cannot focus on what you're doing around you. You know, you need to protect yourself and your partner, even though she might be intimately involved with you off duty. But normally, on a situation like that, what happens? Departments will not put the spouses together, because if something happens, then the spouse will take it personal if his wife is being attacked, or vice versa. So. In regards to that, you got to keep, you know, it's called fraternization in the military. You got to keep your professional life and your personal life separated. And by you able to do that, you'll be able to function just fine. So that's my opinion.
Okay. Brother Coopy.
I don't
Same
have anything
question.
To add to that. That was perfect.
I definitely want to say something about that right now. I definitely want to say this. I applaud you both. I applaud you both for your answers. Remember, we always try to have a little levity. Yes, we're serious with our subjects and our answers, but we know we do want to have a little bit of fun with what we did, because you know what? We're human. You know, we're human. We're human beings trying to elevate our situation and the way our conscious mind works. And to do that, you know what? Sometimes we need to put a little bit of levity in a serious situation, you know? So, you know, with that being said, my name is Brother Alfred, and that's Brother Coopy in the background. And so our special guest, Brother Jonathan Green. All right. I hope to talk to y'all soon and later, and keep everything going good for you. And remember, I always say to you, you know, I might fall down, but I get back up. This is Brother Alfred signing off to you all.
Let's start the show. believe in you.
Yeah.
You know the door.
You tuned in to NSF Radio.
In my deepest
heart. Your host, Brother Alfred, and Colonel Ben Groovy.
When I call and you may not think that I care for you. Well, you know, deep down inside.
You tuned in to NSF Radio.
Have a good night, brothers. Peace.